Earl the Madman here. Welcome to MMAMadhouse.com Live, episode 137. Give a shout-out to our kick-ass sponsors at Clinch Custom Mouthguard, Intimidation Clothing, Paint Crime, Central Oregon Trike, Vision Smoke Shop, Draco Impact Armor, Pro-Am Belt, Game Changer Clothing, Triumph Fitness, Big T's Nightclub, Crossroader Clothing, Ink Tank Tattoo, Hype Fight Store, Never Tap, Brawl Base, and 24 in LV. I've been practicing. Yo Gabba Gabba.
Welcome, everybody. I'm so happy. This will be a humdinger of a show.
Humdingy. Selection. Check out this selection right here. Where you from? You critically acclaimed, lyrically acclaimed, self-proclaimed. Nobody calls you nothing except for your mother. She burnt your monkey ass.
What the hell did you say? You like giving Hummer?
Oh, man. How are you, Lockie? How are you doing today,
bro? Well, I was doing good until I heard your little gay intro.
I just said something about be a humdinger.
I would use
show.
The word fag, but I'm afraid Carl might suspend me for 3 months and fine me $20,000.
Hummy dingy. Hummer dingy.
Oh, wait, I guess I did use the word fag. I'm just calling you a cigarette, Skippy, but not a menthol.
Dude.
I didn't call you a menthol fag.
I just got that app of the day where it gives you a word each day to try to use, and humdinger was a word today.
Get the fuck out of here.
And I tell you what, this show is going to be a humdinger. Remarkable or outstanding person and or thing.
Carl, you're man on the board, right? Just mute him now until whoever contaminated his brain dissipates and...
I got
bring Skippy back
Illuminati,
to...
And I opened it up, and my screen went a little white, and all of a sudden this app was on my phone, so I've been using it.
Yeah. Yeah, Illuminati, you got to be careful with those guys, man.
I need an app.
Hey, man, I want to give a big shout-out. I want to give a big shout-out to all my people in Oklahoma after the devastation from this week. I'm going to hit my vape pen for you guys now.
Well, I'll tell you what, man, and for everybody out there, tonight we're going to have Alana Hands of Stone Jones. We're also going to have, I believe it's Mark Sherko. We were trying to discuss that earlier because you guys know
I'm
know illiterate.
Do you think he's related to Chris Jericho?
I don't know, but I'll tell you what. We finished tonight with what? Your coach who's been whooping you around?
No, he's not. He's not my coach. He's a coach there, but he's not my coach. My coach is actually headed down to compete at the Mundials next week.
It's sweet.
So
well,
hopefully me tapping him out all the time will help him out.
Well, for everybody out there who doesn't know, we're very proud to sponsor Alana Jones. She's going to be fighting at CFA 11 May 24th, I believe at the Banks United Center once again. But this time, folks, it'll be on Access Television.
It was the last time, sucker.
Was it?
Yeah. Or no. They just signed that after the
war. Yeah, I was going to say, this is their first time.
Don't get smart. You got lucky. I hope Carl has the mute button ready for you tonight. I can tell we're going to need it.
Hey, I want to give a big shout-out to my
boys.
Oh,
you do, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to give a shout-out to my boy Super Combat. Big, big shout-out for signing that global media partnership with Playbook International, man. You guys don't know about it. Eurosports, it's legit. It's like ESPN, 75 countries. They're going to be broadcasting their kickboxing events in. I'm super, super pumped.
Dude, when aren't you super, super pumped, dude? It's like you go over to Triumph Fitness, one of our great sponsors, and get your super pump on. Oh, wait. No, you don't.
No, I was going to say, what are you drinking today? Whatever you're smoking, you need to cut it in half. You guys know I love them. I love them. One of my favorite sponsors. You know, and I'll get on that in a second, Carl. You know, I love showing the boys. And by the way, Carter Richardson, one of our writers, is doing a one-year review, kind of catch up with Joe from Triumph Fitness and what he's been doing with this. He's going to start bringing some BJJ classes back to his gym and everything, which is really cool.
Is the guy that you're trying to set me up in a grappling match with, the great black belt of Central Oregon, is he going to be teaching there?
That's the rumor. That's the rumor, is he's going to be doing maybe holding his classes there. And I'm super pumped if he does that, because I'll tell you right now, my ass will be in there, period.
Yeah, right. What are you, just going to stick your ass through the fucking door or keep everything else outside?
I told JT many times, man, you open up a gym here in town, I'll be the first one in the door. You got my word on it.
He opened a gym 12 miles south of where you're referring to as in town, and the only time you ever stepped foot in there was to use the bathroom on your way to Budo Fights because you were afraid to try and walk across the street with a full bladder.
Dude, well, fuck. When you say it like that, it sounds so fucked up, man, but straight up. No, big shout out to JT. I love him, the guy. He's a great guy. He comes and kicks it with me out here in the studio all the time.
Here we go with Skippy bragging again, Carl. He comes and hangs out with me at the studio and blah, 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 blah.
Dude, who
all's been in the studio with you this week, Skippy?
Scott Patterson. Yes, that's Scott Patterson from the IFL days. He was in the studio this week. I had a long, great, great sit-down talk with some individuals who might be investing into the Madhouse name and taking a new step in a new direction. Folks, that will be hopefully breaking news soon. It will blow you guys' minds. But
mind-blower! Is that like a game-changer but more intense or what?
Oh, dude, this is a big-time game-changer. Really, some really, really cool shit for Madhouse. Big time.
Carl, you hear that? Game changer, mind blower.
I'll tell you right now.
Maybe your new app has a word you can use for that.
It's a humdinger of a situation. Now, straight up, and I'll tell you guys right now, we pulled this off. Me and Carl locked this deal down. There ain't a promotion covering media in the Pacific Northwest that will not be looking back going, damn, we should have joined forces. We're going to leave them
all. We don't want none of those tacky mother... I'm not even going to waste the fucking good word on them. I just think it's funny that, like, some of the promotions around here are like, oh, we're really going to have this group with, like, 400 followers. That's really who we want to cover our event. Like, I know you guys have like 9,700 followers, but, you know, you just really don't show us enough love. And so, you know, well, the reason we don't show you any love is because you make it a fucking pain in my ass to cover your fucking event.
Which is funny because, we talk about this, and anybody in the media world knows this. You get promoters out there who, it's like you got to twist their arm just to get a press release or a fight card or a specific time for weigh-ins. Then you got guys like my buddies and your buddies around the country and overseas and Carl's buddies who they're flooding us with so much information that we're like, dude, chill, bro. You know, we got it, you know.
I think it's funny that organizations outside the state that you and I both reside in are more willing to work with us than the clowns inside the state we live in. It's like you'd think it would be the other way around. Like, I shouldn't have as much difficulty covering an event in Oregon as I do, when I can like call somebody like hours before an event in Washington and know that I'm going to have a spot and press passes, more than likely multiple. It's like, come on, dude, pull your head out just for like 3 seconds.
Well, it's funny you say that because you know as well as I do, you know, we get calls 2 o'clock in the morning from people around the United States and beyond saying, hey, look, I got this event coming up that you guys know about, man. I lost a fighter. Can you get the word out? Hey, guys, I got a huge event coming up in 3 weeks. I got this lineup. Hey, is there any way you guys can help me get this out? Hey, here's some information. Dude, and these people don't even live here. They bypass their local media to come here, which is beautiful because that's what we do. We support local MMA. There is no spot in the world we don't support it. But like you said, we get promotions here that are like, well, you guys cover Washington. What's wrong with you dumb motherfuckers? It's local MMA. You can only cover us and only us. What do you mean you cover somebody within a 50-mile radius of me? I can't show you no love. You can't come to my event. Okay. Step off then, dip.
Yeah, like, that's why I don't even waste my time or Carl's time with, like, hey, dude, give me a press pass to this event in Oregon. I'm like, kick rocks. Like, I'll send Caitlin. Nothing against Caitlin. I love you. But
she is probably listening.
or it's like, I'll send Sam Selander to your event.
Well, you know, it's funny because, like, you know, look, we've got a fighter that started sponsoring Lehigh Dominguez. Okay? Have you guys noticed how much stuff that Steel Fight's pushing our way? I mean, it's ridiculous how much I'm seeing, and they're pushing our way because they see that opportunity to get good exposure because that's what we do. We cover events. But when you're so close-minded that you think you're the only event in a 50-mile radius that I should be allowed to cover, man, you're a jackal. And you know what? I don't care if your promotion's been around 30 years, 6 years, or 6 weeks. A jackal's a jackal, man. And you know what? If you think you're the best promotion in a state or a region, then bring fighters in from around that state or region, not just within your city limits. And don't tout that you're all this when you on dollar pro fights.
Dude, we're going to have to get this. I'm going to have to talk to Carly and have her take this fucking app off your phone because you're using way too big of words that you normally don't use.
Oh, that could be the alpha group I ejected today.
Yeah, right, bro. You're not stepped up on the alpha brain, bro. I would know if you were alpha braining because I would be, like, using the same words. You're just using some cheesy little app. Hey, did you participate in wear a singlet to work day on Monday?
You know what? If you can call overalls redneck singlet, yes.
No.
Then I cut the legs out.
Yeah, no. There's no place in the fashion world for overalls, bro. Unless you're like out there sitting on a still somewhere, which I wouldn't put it past you to be sitting on a still somewhere in central Oklahoma or Oregon, but I mean,
I
would be kind of surprised if you were.
Folks, we might not be getting a hold of Miss Alana Jones. I don't know. I know she's in Florida already. As far as I know, she's in Florida. She might be tied up still with some press conference stuff down there. So we're working on it. So for those fans waiting, we are working on getting this young lady on here. We got Matt. She's been on the show before. You know, it's going to be a great time if we can get her back on tonight.
We can try again. I'll try again here in a couple of minutes, but we can always try again.
Here we go. It says, here's an update on Alana Jones. She's doing a ton of interviews, pictures, and talking with lots of people. She's in good spirits, motivated. We're trying to get to everybody. Blah, 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 blah. Best wishes, you know, kind of thing. So she could just be tied up on another interview right now. So folks, deal with it. You know, we're trying to get to her. Labaki, I know me and you like to watch some crazy MMA. There were some good events since the last time we talked to these wonderful folks. What are you looking forward to coming up? Because I know there's been some, we just passed some really great events.
M1's like at 3 o'clock in the morning or something. No, not 3, like maybe 7 o'clock in the morning.
I think it's 7.
8. And that's got, dude, that's got a sick, that's, dude, that's got a sick little card. If you're familiar, I mean, Vyacheslav Vasilevsky, that kid is a fucking killer. And then you've also got, dude, that card is badass. Hold on, I gotta look at this cat's name again. Murat Gafurov. He's a badass. Featherweight. Vugar Basyev, another badass.
Dude,
Maga
I would say, dude, Usamana, I think they got,
Dokerkin.
Yeah.
Ibrahimov. Like, who?
Dude, there's that. There's some great cards coming out of Brazil this weekend, folks. You know, CFA, obviously, which we talked about, which will have Travis Wolf versus Mike Kyle.
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting fight, dude. Travis Wolf is such a big guy to make that cut down to 205. So crazy. Jules has got a big fight this weekend with Shuggy Rock Sugiyama in the main event. Legend
FC, dude.
You've got Emelianenko versus Sapp.
Hey, hold on. Folks, Madhouse sponsored fighter DJ Linderman, FA8, Knight of Heavyweights. We can't forget that. He's already over there. Poland, boys, he's going for the title against Michael Kidda.
Yeah, no, but we hadn't got that far yet, homie.
It just hit me. I was like, dude, that's going to be a sick card. But
there's
a lot
of MMA, dude. You got King of the Cage this weekend. You've got Battlefield Fight League, Treadwell versus Ayard, Hard Knocks 33, Asylum Fight League. We need to really start having somebody at Asylum Fight League. That just seems like something that Madhouse should be covering.
Now, is that the one in New York?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Well, it's in Jersey, but, yeah. It's on GFL, so maybe we'll get to watch it. Maybe Tim and Freddie will hook us up. Frankie, Timmy.
I could not begin to butcher Tim's last name. By the way, guys, go to GoFight Live, dude, all week long. They got events for free. It costs you nothing to sign up. You can sign up through Facebook. You can check this out. I just read this. Carl, I don't know if you know this either. GFL now, not only on Comcast Sports, now they're on Roku too. Folks, that's right. You can get them on Roku. That means you can sit in your living room on your TV and watch it multiple ways. You don't even have to.
Dude, I watch it at the bar, bro. I watch it at the bar sometimes when it's on Root Sports.
Yeah, look, they got them. Gosh, yeah, we got Hard Knocks this weekend.
Yeah, I just
fight
said
night
that.
At the point. Yeah, there's a bunch of good, dude, yeah. And they got boxing. They've got, you know, Circle Track Speedway, motorcycle racing. They've got soccer. They've got wrestling. They've got
MMA,
kickboxing.
Let's talk about 2 weeks from now. Let's talk about 2 weeks from now when you and I will be at absolute chaos.
Dude, I'm super pumped about that. I really am.
Did you ever find your T-shirt? I've got mine. I actually wore mine to jiu-jitsu. No. I wore my No Pain, Just Glory shirt to jiu-jitsu today. I wore my Absolute Chaos to the gym last night to do kettlebells. Because it was absolute chaos. Chaos. Chaos.
Dude, listen to this lineup. Team Evolution Mixed Martial Arts. Brian Johnson Fight Team. West Coast Fight Team.
Team Evolution is going to be there? Oh, man. Kevin Schumacher, I need to talk to you, bro.
Pinnacle Martial Arts, Next Generation, Northwest Elite, Element 5, One MMA, which we all know is Chael Sonnen's deal now. South Sound Martial Arts, Knockout Unlimited, BJJ Olympia, plus three independent fighters. I mean, there's like 10 gyms represented at this event. I mean, dude, guys, if you're anywhere in the Pacific Northwest and you want to take a weekend, maybe take your girl, go lie to her that you want to take her to Seattle and shoot down for the fight because you just happened to find out about it after you're on the road from a text from a friend. Dude, Nick Cougaran's on this versus somebody that won the title on a and won some Madhouse free gear from Draco Impact Armor, one of our great sponsors, Cameron Savella Rivera will be defending his title. And I believe Nick Cougaran is currently beach sport 155 title. So this is kind of champion versus champion. Really good. Omar Petty, the Silent Assassin, he'll be on this card. A great, great, great card.
Rumble in the Cage. Now, that's the Lee Mean one, right? There's too many of these cages and rumbling. And I'm all
Lee
fucking confused.
Event.
Yeah.
Lee Mean,
yeah,
Lee
yeah.
Mean show. It's heading to Saskatchewan.
By the way, we'll
oh,
have
is he going to be in Saskatoon? Is he going to be in Saskatoon?
do we got anybody in Saskatchewan? Who do we got?
Perhaps. That's Carl's area, dude.
Perhaps.
Cord hit me up wanting to know if Madhouse is going to make it to Prestige Fight Club this weekend. He's like, I'd like to take your crew out for some beers.
Well, I don't
Carl
have a crew there, but
if they're Molson Ice.
We don't have a crew there, but we've got potential maybe for somebody that can cover an event there.
Let me know if they want to do it, and they can. I'll get with Cord and get it all taken care of. To answer your question, Lepaki, that you asked originally, yes, my Absolute Chaos shirt is hanging on my wall of fame on the south side.
Dude, I rep my shit, homie. I rep it. I rep it out everywhere.
I'll be honest. The original Madhouse shirt I got years ago when I first started here, I wore it until it was, like, dirty. And then one day I just hung it on the wall because it's the first one and the last run of Carl's run at that time. And, I mean, old bumper stickers, old logo, everything old. So I hung it up in the studio to get it cool because I got the custom-made brass-bound one for Cage Sport. But then now it's just become an addiction, dude. Like, all these fighter walkout shirts and sponsor shirts and promotions, I just keep hanging them. I don't know why.
Dude, I just got some great news. I'll tell you later.
Dude, hold on. Carl, play the music.
Oh, hold it. Whoa.
Yeah, well.
Here it comes. Okay.
Muy importante.
Muy importante. Muy importante. What do you got, buddy? Throw it out at us.
I can't tell you yet. Honestly, I just got a message, but I can't tell you.
Folks, for anybody out there who wants to hashtag douchebag, it's at Lepaki, L-O-P-A-K-I. Hashtag douchebag, folks.
I just pulled a Skippy. It was like, I thought it was really kind of clever. It was a humdinger of a situation I just created. Carl, are you going to Battlefield this weekend, or are you on hold until Battle at the Border?
Yeah, Battlefield's way down in Vancouver. I won't be getting to that show. That's like a 14-hour trip. I'm heading to Battle for the Border 2 on June 1st, and then BFL in Penticton on June 8th.
Dude, if your people weren't so uptight, Carl, I could go up and cover Battlefield. It's only like 7 hours. But
you just stay Carl's house.
For a bunch of people that like to drink, Jesus, why do you hate on a guy for drinking?
It's the same for us, though. Your guys treat us the same way if we like to drink.
Well, that's because
dude, you're so wrong. Americans love Canadians more than they love Americans.
Not at the border.
Yeah, look, you guys took in Mark Pavlich with open arms.
Not only that, dude, we know you guys have no crimes. So that means nobody in your country is ever mad. You guys all drink Molson Ice. You guys play hockey and have sex with bears. I mean, what cooler people is there?
Dude, your police ride around on horses. I mean, how dangerous could it be?
Right? Dude, I love it. He's like, I'm a Mountie. Stop. I'm driving away my car at 60. No.
And then he's like, I'm on Secretariat, bitch.
Hey, that's not funny because I just bought a couch made from Secretariat. It cost me $2,000.
Damn. You must be a high roller, dude. Buy a $2,000 couch, you got a 3-year-old and a fucking 8-year-old?
Dude,
Jesus,
my favorite
Carl,
thing is
must
to buy.
Be nice, huh?
I love buying animals that are famous and turning them into furniture. Like, dude, I got a Mr. Ed bedspread. It's kind of freaky, but I love it.
Oh, I figured you had a unicorn bedspread.
I'd like to get a Laffy bat mask.
A what?
A Laffy bat mask.
Bath mask? What the fuck is a bath? Dude, okay, put down the app. Put down the application that's giving you these big words and speak Skippy talk.
Bath.
And fix your damn camera.
B-A-T-H, Matt. What do you call a guy with no arms and no legs at your front door? Matt. That's horrible, I know, folks.
Fix your camera, jerky.
Oh, sorry. For all those out there who are watching us. Oh, we're famous.
It's like
hey,
Carl
I'm
had
on.
To turn the studio into where we're two different rooms so that Skippy and I don't actually throw down. It's more of a peaceful environment this way. Skippy's walls are padded, though, because sometimes it gets a little crazy.
Hey, you know what? Carl, why don't you go ahead and just get Mark?
Hey, Skippy, you know what? Why don't you quit telling Carl, the producer, what to do? You're just a little host.
Hey,
he's the boss.
I'm like the peanut butter. I spread the fun.
Okay, Carl, utilize the mute button with him. Jesus, it's getting. I didn't wear rubber shoes to the office tonight.
Dude, it's been like this all day, man. Mandy was just being such a rile, man. She was just being such an ornery chick at work today and at the bar, man. We were just like, we started getting trashed, and then she kept yelling at me that I was too trashed. So. I've just been in an ornery mood all day, I think. How come it is, like, when we party at work, it's okay when she does it, but when I party harder than her, I'm overdoing it, and it's not cool. It's no sense to me.
Because she wants to be the center of attention. Why do you think I had to leave her, and now I end up paying her freaking child support every month?
Dude, by the way, you guys are going to love it. She told me today that she's going to do a photo all nude with the Madhouse belt. And, you know, because she's all got those new tattoos and she thinks she'll look a lot better. So she's like, dude, I'll come over in front of the logo and we'll, like, just have the belt on and nothing else and take some black and white photos. So thanks for your ex-wife, buddy.
Gosh, she wasn't even my ex-wife. Do you think I'm going to make that stupid mistake? She wouldn't be getting anything if she wasn't a fucking...
She's your baby's mama, that's all.
She cheated on me and got pregnant somehow with my brother, and the DNA test came back positive for me. I don't really understand how that worked.
That's the Illuminati, buddy.
Dude, you don't need to tell me twice, homie.
Hey, dude, speaking of the Illuminati... let's screw the Illuminati. Let's bring in Mark right away. Mark, how you doing tonight, brother?
Oh, pretty good, man. How about yourself?
Hey, we're doing wonderful, man. Welcome to Madhouse Live.
Speak for yourself, dude. Speak for yourself, man. I'm stuck working with this clown, bro. I hope that you can survive the next 30 minutes with him, because it's going to be a long, painful ride, I have a feeling.
Oh, dude, I've listened to the show before.
Well, and I tell you what, you are definitely somebody we're excited to talk to about. First of all, you're an impressive, impressive fighter with just a great record in what you're doing now, and you're pro, and but just personally, you know, anybody who follows you, you're a pretty funny guy, you're pretty outgoing. So for everybody out there, let's start off right, and why don't you tell everybody who you are, where you fight out of, and what your record is.
My name is Mark Cherico. They call me the Pride of Bloomfield. It's a little Italian community located in Pittsburgh. I represent Fight Club Pittsburgh and the Henzo Gracie Pittsburgh Academy. My record combined is 13-0. I was 9-0 as an amateur, and I'm currently 4-0 as a pro.
Definitely.
So how's the Pennsylvania fight scene, bro?
What's that?
How's the Pennsylvania fight scene?
It's getting better now that the rules we just had the rules change for the amateurs. I don't know if you knew the amateur rules here were pretty bad. So a lot of our top amateurs like myself and a lot of other guys, we were going to Ohio to fight. So it kind of dwindled, and there wasn't a big fight scene here. But now with the rules changing and a lot of us turning pro, we've been fighting here, and it's really grown the MMA community here.
How difficult was that? Because the rule set there for amateurs was no strikes to the head of a grounded opponent at all, right?
Yeah, which is horrible. I mean, how are you supposed to get ready for a professional career when you can't punch the guy on the ground? And then they're telling you after three fights you can turn pro, and not only can you punch someone in the face on the ground, but you can also now elbow them.
Now, were knees to the head of an opponent legal?
No, you weren't allowed. The only striking you were allowed to do on the feet was you could kick the body and legs, and you could punch head or body. And that was it. There was a knees to the body, but you weren't allowed to knee the head. You weren't allowed to kick or punch. You weren't allowed to knee or kick the head standing. You weren't allowed to punch knee or elbow the head on the ground.
So for you, how big of a difference was it once you stepped into the pro circuit? Was it just, wow, this is completely different, or, man, I train this way, so be it?
Yeah, for me, thankfully, like, I did all 9 of my amateur fights were in Ohio, where the rules we were allowed to at least punch on the ground. So the only difference I really had to adjust to was the head kicks and knees to the head and, of course, elbows. But, you know, we've always trained head kicks. I've done some light knee sparring, and we've worked controlled elbows. So really it hasn't changed much. It wasn't like a huge, like, oh, my God, we're allowed to elbow now and stuff like that. I like using them. It's a nice extra weapon to have. Biggest thing for me is I'm a shorter fighter, and my first couple opponents were a little taller, so I had to deal with them throwing head kicks a lot because me being shorter, of course, that's what they're going to go for. But outside of that, it hasn't really been a big deal for me.
So now that you're able to play around with more of that, you know, dirty Thai style knees and dirty elbows inside, are you starting to like training with that a lot more?
Yeah, I've really liked it. And my last fight, we worked a lot of elbows, especially on the ground, like a lot of groundwork with some elbows. And in my last fight against Billy Vaughn, I actually got to use them. So it was really nice. I actually cut them twice with elbows, and it actually allowed me to set up the submission victory. So I've really liked using elbows. It's definitely a nice tool to have in my game.
So I got to ask you, you know what? I would say arguably your toughest test to date, and Donnie Walker coming up. How excited were you to get that fight?
Oh man, I was super excited. I remember it was right after the Vaughn fight. They had mentioned me actually the day I was at weigh-ins. They actually pulled me aside and said they had talked to his manager, who was the UFC fighter Jason Dent. And they had said that they had come back very interested and that it was probably going to happen. So that added a little pressure to I had to beat Vaughn, because it wouldn't make any sense for Walker to want to fight me if I lost my last fight. So when I won that fight, I was elated. Like, that was huge. Like, to get a chance to fight someone that's been to the biggest show twice. I mean, obviously, he had something that Zuffa and the Fertittas and Dana White saw to bring him in. So getting a chance to fight him and see where my skill level is, and a chance to get a victory against an ex-UFC fighter will skyrocket me, I think, up the rankings.
Oh, definitely.
Hey, now, you went on a big streak of submissions throughout your amateur career, then you wrap it up with the TKO. Was that something that you were looking for, or are you just kind of going there at the mind frame that, hey, you know, whatever happens, however I get the win, as long as I get my hand raised at the end of the night?
No, you know, I mean, I always go in there. I don't care how I win. As long as my hand's raised in the night, I'm happy with that. But that fight was a little personal. That kid I had beaten him a couple years earlier in, like, a minute, and he went on a couple interviews bashing me and saying I was hiding from him. So when we got in there, I wanted to embarrass him. So I actually shot in on him at one point and carried him across the cage flexing before I slammed him. and then, like, And I don't usually do that. Like, I like to showboat walking out the cage. I have respect for all my opponents, but when people had to run their mouth to get a fight, it's just retarded. So I wanted to make sure he never called me out again. And I would have loved to have gone for a submission, but he kind of just turtled up and just laid there. So I just kept punching, and then eventually the ref stopped it.
Do you kind of wish in a way that he'd have tapped to strike so you could have really been, like, stood over him and been like, bitch?
Yeah, that would have been the ultimate. I think he pretty much quit. The last shot I had, he kind of, like, fell over, and that's when I picked him up. And I remember slamming him, and he made, like, a weird, like, girlish, like, sound as I slammed him, and I kind of chuckled in my head. And I knew right there he was kind of broken.
Now, what do you, you're just about, what, just a little over a month away from Pinnacle Fighting Championships Pittsburgh Challenge, right?
Yeah, I think it's going to be up almost a little over 5 weeks, just over 5 weeks.
So, you know, for fans out there, you know, let's talk a little bit about this, your camp. How do you work your camps? Do you try to change them up from camp to camp? Do you try to stick with the consistency of a program that you like? What do you do for your camps?
I always try to add something. Usually what I do is I'll watch my old fights, like the especially the most recent one, and try to see what I did wrong and what I did right, but mostly what I did wrong, and trying to find little holes in my game on how I would beat myself. And I try to use the weeks before the camp to better myself at that. And then in my camps, honestly, I'm just trying to stay sharp and make sure everything's clicking. I like to do a good mix of everything, some boxing, some Muay Thai, wrestling, jiu-jitsu. We have a fighter class every day, Monday through Friday, and we have it specifically for one set thing. You know, we have one day of sparring, one day of boxing, one day of grappling, one day just strict jiu-jitsu, one day of wrestling. And, you know, in between, like, earlier in the day, we might do some technique sparring 2 days a week, just trying to mix it up and just make sure we stay healthy and make sure we're just staying sharp with everything and not neglecting anything in our game.
Now, with the team that you have, that you, you know, and the gym that you're working out of, tell us, are there any maybe kids that are coming up that are at that amateur level where they're close to being pro that maybe we should keep our eyes on?
We got a couple of amateurs coming up. They're still young in terms of their amateur career. We have one kid that I'm really, really high on. He's only 3-0 as an amateur, but honestly, I think we could turn him pro now and he would be able to hang. His name's Jake Schilling. The kid's a savage. I mean, we'll put him in there for Shark Tanks, and it'll be his third round in the Shark Tank where he should be dead, and those guys that are coming in fresh should be attacking him, and he's running full steam at them. I mean, the kid just has, like, he has that toughness that you just can't teach. He's a savage.
So how important do you think it is right now, him doing his camp alongside of you? Obviously, he's an amateur. He's going to learn more from you, but that team kind of, you know, training together for fights, how important do you think that is to him and yourself?
I think it's important for both of us. I mean, he's getting the best of me. He's not getting, like, if he was getting ready for a camp and maybe I was a little out of shape and I wasn't there every day of the sparring sessions and roll with him, he's getting the best Mark Cherico he could possibly get every round because I'm training for my toughest fight. So he's going to get the best me every round that he's in there with me. And then we got Justin Steve fighting. We got a guy named Kumble Worthy fighting. So, I mean, there's a lot of guys that have fights coming up that he's constantly in there rolling with and sparring with. And there's no way he isn't getting better. I mean, there's no situation that he's going to see inside the amateur ranks, any fight that he's in, that he hasn't seen from one of us. So, I mean, there's nothing, I think, that will rattle him in a fight.
Well, that's really cool to hear. And obviously, you know, with you being the pro and him being the amateur, you know, you've got some things that you're working on to prepare for this fight. But, you know, is there something that you see that maybe pushes you in these younger kids still? Because, I mean, I know you're a pro, and as an amateur, you were fighting for titles, and now you're fighting for a pro career. But do you see some spark in those kids every day in the gym that just maybe give you a boost?
Yeah, especially, like, even in summertime, it's the people that have no want or desire to fight, but they're there every day. You see them come in day in and day out, and they're just practicing. They just want to become a better martial artist, you know, and you hear them talking about it, and they sit down, they talk to you, and they, you know, everybody knows, like, in MMA, there's times where you're going to hit a wall, and, you know, you're going to peak for a little while. And, you know, it gets frustrating, but that you just got to work through it, and eventually you're going to get to that next level. And to see people that have no desire to fight but are in there every day constantly training and training right through those peaks and getting better, like, it just makes you want to get better. You're like, well, this guy has no desire to even fight. He's just like, you know, a bank teller, or he's a car salesman, whatever it is they do. He's in there every day trying to get better, and this is what I want as a career. How can I not do the same?
Yeah.
Hey, now, can we talk about fighting at NAAFS?
Yeah.
And what a great opportunity that provides amateurs out there in your region of the country.
Oh, yeah, definitely. you know, I had kind of a little falling out with him, but I still will speak highly of the amateur tournament because I think it's one of the toughest tournaments for a lot of reasons. I mean, you know, you got to fight twice just to get in the tournament. So you got to fight twice. You're already fighting guys that are even if, like, your first fight in there, the guy's going to be tough. Everybody there is tough. It doesn't matter what their record is. If they have, like, a 4-6 record, chances are half of those losses are to really, really, really tough guys. So, you know, you're always fighting a tough guy. And then, you know, I think it's by May or June they rank the top four. And so by August you're fighting one of those guys. So you're fighting a top four guy in the division. You beat him, then you're fighting the other guy. Like, you know, one faces four, two fights three. So, you know, it's usually one and two. At the end of the year, you're fighting either the best or second best amateur in the division. I mean, there's no argument there. The best guys on the East Coast are fighting in those tournaments. So it's just helping you get better and get ready for the pro career.
And then the Pittsburgh Challenge is really, you've had a chance to fight on all two of their cards with your fight with Donnie Walker being on their third event in the Challenge Series. What is that like?
Oh, man, I love the events there. I mean, Dave Click, Matt Layshock, they really take care of you. They're really on the ball. They're constantly in contact with you. You know, I've had a lot of problems with opponents falling out. They always contact you. You know, they're not the type of promoters that are going to wait a week and then finally tell you, hey, you know, your opponent fell out. We couldn't find anybody. You know, they called me my last fight, Max Seneceros. Fell out 2 weeks before the fight. They called me within a half an hour of when he pulled out, and we're already had a laundry list of replacement names for me. You know, when you get to the event, you know, you go in your locker room, there's towels, there's bottles of water. They're coming in and seeing if you need anything, gloves, gauze, you know, there's showers there. The lighting system they do so much just to make the show and the experience great, like the Parade of Champions. When you walk out before the fight, they bring all the fighters out and bring you to the center of the cage, and they just do it right. You know, the shows are just, it's just a good time.
Sounds like they really kind of get that whole situation of that it's more than, people aren't just going, I mean, people go to watch the fight, but it's the spectacle of the event that keeps people coming back. And it's good to see that local promotions understand that and they allow fighters like yourself and the other guys on that card to start getting that experience, because that's some of the most difficult thing as you guys start to progress up through the ranks of organizations. You know, you go from fighting in the fairgrounds to fighting in the arena to fighting at, you know, Bellator or MFC and then hopefully one day in the UFC. And it's opportunities and situations like that that help you grasp what the entire show is about.
Yeah. Yeah, they definitely get it. And, you know, Dave Cook's been around for a while. He used to run another show in Ohio, and I fought for him a couple times. And when he told me he was getting back in the game, there was no doubt in my mind that that's who I want to fight for.
Hey, let me ask you, you know, looking over you, I believe you have four amateur titles in your amateur ranking. Which one was the best to win?
The best one was definitely the NAAFS, because, like I said, it was the national championship tournament that I won. My best performance out of all four of them was probably I fought for Rocktagon, which I think is over. They have some shows over in California, too. At the time, it was one of their first shows. And that was probably my best performance. I beat a guy named Mark McDonald. And that was really when I think I kind of came into my own and really started opening up and showing my whole game. So I'd say either one of those were probably my best victories.
Now
is your strength in the grappling?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I started off with boxing, and I don't know, I just really kind of fell in love with jiu-jitsu, and I really like punching on the ground to set up submissions. But I think I'm really well-rounded. I haven't really had a chance as much outside of my last fight and maybe one or two amateur fights to show off my stand-up. It's just been a lot of times the guys that I'm fighting are so weak on the ground, I'm looking to take them out as fast as possible, so you're going to attack their weakest link.
Well, it shows. I mean, for anybody out there who's looked at your record, it definitely shows. You know, you have multiple submission finishes in early, you know, in round ones or real early in round two. So I like it.
Yeah, I like it. I think a lot of my fights, too, is where guys actually shot on me, like, from punches. Like, I'm throwing and
they shoot and I sprawl and end up getting a submission off of that. But, I mean, I like it. Let them, if everybody thinks I'm just a submission guy, that's great. You know, that bodes well for me.
So how much boxing did you do before you started really getting into MMA?
I trained with a boxing coach for probably about 6 months, then got into MMA, and then I took an amateur boxing match, and I trained a lot. Like, most of my camps were doing a lot of boxing, and I just did jits work, like, on the side with my original MMA coach. Like I said, I would have probably done more amateur boxing. It was just so hard with the schedule with MMA that I was like, I want to be an MMA fighter, so that's what I tried to focus on, and just taking MMA fights. But we're hoping maybe at the end of the summer to take a pro boxing match here in Pittsburgh, maybe at the Rivers Casino.
Oh, that's pretty cool. I like that. Now, I'm curious, some of the fans out there might be curious, did you ever get somebody hired for your boombox carrier?
No, not yet. I got some feelers. I got some people coming in for some interviews. So we're going to see if we can make that happen. I think it's going to be a great opportunity for somebody to really move up in the field of, I don't know what field that would be, but it'll be awesome. I mean, to carry a boombox around for me and just play I'm a boss is a pretty easy, good job, I think. We're going to offer health benefits and everything.
Mark, will that need to be the traditional boombox, right? Like, I'm talking like the 14-inch tall one that's like 6 inches
wide.
Oh,
yeah, I'm talking, you know, like circa 1988, 89 era, like right around there. That's the kind of boombox we need.
Yeah. Now, and folks, understand you can progress to giving him water in between rounds and even cooking his meals. This is something you don't want to pass up. This guy's a future legend. Get on board
and
train now.
They can email their resumes to markcherico@gmail.com.
I got to tell you, I saw that and I just cracked up. I loved it. I thought that was classic. And, you know,
I'm not going to put anybody on. Someone actually did message me on Facebook. I'm not going to put their name out there, but to ask me if that was actually a serious job offer.
I think we should put their – no, dude, that's one thing that we do around here. We want people to know, you know, we like to out people for doing silly stuff.
No, he comes to the gym. I don't want him to be too mad at me.
Well, I tell you what, you definitely have this, you know, personal, you know, funny character to you. You seem very likable. How much time do you get to spend with fans, maybe before the event, after weigh-ins kind of deal, or after your victories?
I like to meet a lot of the fans, and the last couple fights, sadly, I wasn't really able to. You get out of the cage, I go in the back and get changed, and you come back, just being the main event, everybody kind of pours out right after you win. So I haven't really gotten to meet too many of my fans, like, people-wise from Pittsburgh. But it was kind of cool a couple times in NAAFS, even though I like to try to play the villain, and I would bash the Cleveland Browns or tell all of Canton that I'll fight them in the parking lot. That I got to meet a lot of cool people after the fight, and, you know, it was kind of cool. People were thanking me for autographs, and I'm thanking them, like, just for asking for an autograph. Like, I was taking them back. People would want an autograph from me.
Now, hey, is the Mohawk standard hairstyle for fight day?
Yeah, I hate the Mohawk, man. I hate it with a passion, but I'm Italian, and we're superstitious, and I did it for my first ever grappling tournament, and I won. So I can't shave it off. I feel like I'll lose, so I got to keep it every.
I feel like you're the right kind of guy to ask this question to. It's fight day. When is the right time for Mark Cherico to take that final shit before he gets in the cage?
Oh, man. I don't know, because I eat a lot after our weigh-ins, man. I know you're not supposed to, like, go crazy, but I'd probably say, like, right as soon as I get at the arena, say, like, what do you say, like, 5 o'clock, 5, 6 o'clock, something like that. That's probably
to actually do it at the arena?
Oh, yeah, man, because I got to eat. I usually try to eat something at the arena. Like, I try to keep my meals the exact same that I ate all, like, during the entire cut. So, you know, I'll get up in the morning. I might add a little bit extra, maybe some pancakes, you know, get some carbs, and I'll do some pasta the night before. But, yeah, usually as soon as you get to the arena.
locate the locker room, and drop your bag off.
So what's your weight cut average?
Oh, man. Last fight, I was actually really good because we kind of had a quick turnover. But I say like 180, I walk around that.
Okay. Not bad.
Damn,
yeah, that's
not
a
rough.
Monster cut, bro.
No, it's honestly not too bad. I did have trouble in December. It was mainly because we tried a different water cut that I wasn't used to, and I retained a little too much water, and I'm actually a pound over. And I was willing to cut it that night, but they told me I had to weigh in the next day. And I was like, dude, there's no way I can stay at 147 overnight. And so we ended up, one of the other guys missed weight by like 18 pounds, so I just said I'd fight him, and we switched opponents. But other than that, I've never really had any problems.
Now, here's an interesting, I don't know if you know this or not, and LeBlanc, you know I didn't get this off my app. I got it off OPB today, listening to the radio show.
Oh,
do you know that you could drop 3 pounds of germs? You have the average human has 3 pounds of germs on their body.
How do you drop that? That'd be interesting to know.
Well, that's what they were talking about, you know, hard, you know, regimens of antibiotic and germ, you know, killing, like, antibacterial stuff. But, yeah, they were talking about the average person carries 3 pounds. And I was like, wow, I wonder if fighters know that. They take a bunch of antibiotics or something.
I'm always considering, like, cutting off my big toe or something if I'm a little over.
What promotions in Pennsylvania have quality cheer ring girls? That's what I want to know about. I don't want to go to any. Oh,
man, Pinnacle. The last Pinnacle fight, they had strippers. Yeah, the last Pinnacle fight had some nice strippers for the ring girls. So we had good ring girls this past time. And I think NASA has some pretty good ones usually. But, you know, sometimes you go to these shows and they got, like, the sad trail. I'm like, man, at least shave your belly before you put on a bikini.
Yeah, exactly, bro. I'm like, where did you guys go find these people? Like, did they look like they fell out of a tree?
I swear it's usually, like,
the
promoter just grabs, like, their cousins or their sister because they feel bad for them and they ask to be ring girls. And they're like, yeah, I guess, because they don't want to have a big family fight. That's my opinion on the situation.
Now, here's the crazy thing. Skippy and I talked to a guy. Did we talk to Shaw last week, Skippy? Man, I got to cut back on the vape pen. We talked to a guy last week, and he had the promoter put in his contract that he's not allowed to fraternize with any of the women under contract with the promotion. How would you feel about having that stipulation?
Well, that'd be fine because I got a wife, so I'm not even allowed to look at them. She'll sucker punch me. She don't care if I was in the cage looking at her and she walked around with a round one card. You know, because we don't go to round two. We just do round one. She'd have been in there fighting me.
Do you take more of a beating when you piss your wife off or when you're doing a Shark Tank?
Definitely when I piss my wife off. Yeah, that's a definite. She's brutal.
Dude, that is awesome, man. So now, you know, you fight tough dudes. You're on a real big tear. What are some things that you do to, like, mentally prepare yourself for that next battle? Because, I mean, it's got to, you know, I talk to a lot of guys that go, you know, on streaks like this, and sometimes they kind of find a way to get complacent. But with the way that you go in there and continually finish fights, I can tell that you don't have that problem. What are some things you do to kind of help prevent that from happening?
Oh, man, I just use, like, I have a 9-month-old daughter, and that's kind of my motivation now. You know, I'm fighting to provide for her. And so I got to stay hungry, man. I got to stay on the grind and keep fighting. You know, like Jordan Burr says, you got to embrace the grind. And that's what we try to do. Everybody at Fight Club, we just try to train, and make sure you're always staying hungry. Because if you don't, man, there's always somebody right behind you creeping up, and they're just as hungry, if not hungrier. So, you know, we want to make sure we're always ready. And then it helps that a lot of people kind of bash me. Like, if you ever look on any videos of mine on YouTube, there's this one really weird guy who has an obsession with bashing me. So I kind of use, like, his stuff as bulletin board material to fuel me a little bit more.
Have you ever met that guy?
No, I have no idea who he is. He's some guy, he claims to be from Ohio. So I think it's Ohio BJJ Master or something like that. So I just use guys like that, anybody that wants to bash me, just as
just reason to fucking train harder.
Hold on.
No, you shut your mouth. Mark, it's funny you say that because you posted, and I told Lepaki about this earlier today, you have one of the coolest posts I've seen in a long time from any fighter. It's a four-picture collage of you walking out, beating down a guy, arm-barring a guy, and having your hand raised, and it said something like, walk out, fuck shit up, victory, or something along those lines. I think it was beautiful.
Walk in, fuck shit up, leave.
That's it. I love it, dude. But that's your mentality when it comes to business time in the cage, and it shows.
That's how you got to be. I think too many people get caught up with the jitters of fighting, and, man, I worry about the fighting. I'm nervous about the fight today, but by fight night, I could care less, man. I'm happy. I'm just happy to be there, man. I don't get nervous. I'm not nervous in the back. Usually I'm either sleeping or walking around dancing or making jokes or something. I don't really even warm up. I'm usually like walking around talking to people, like seeing my wife and my family as they're all getting there, trying to make sure they get to their tables. Got to make sure the fans that buy tickets off me are happy, because if they ain't buying tickets, and if they ain't buying tickets, I can't make as much money. So I try to make sure they're all happy. Then I go back in the back. I don't let the nerves get to me.
So with that aggressive mentality that you have once it's time to get in that cage, how much do you look at, we'll take, you know, the UFC because it's the big show. How much do you look at that and see these guys who come in flat-footed, slow, and try to just hold somebody down? They're not trying to really finish. I mean, you're starting to see that more and more. And you have just the opposite style of fighting. You're very aggressive. You're trying to kill, kill, kill. What do you think about that when you see guys just kind of lackadaisical in the cage?
I don't get it, because, like, you work so hard to get to that point, and now you're going to risk, like, even if you win a boring decision, if you go out there the next fight and you shook the jitters and you go out there and get knocked out, they're remembering that boring fight, and you're going to get cut because you had one boring win and then you had a loss. So, like, I'm going to go out there, and if I go out of my shield, I go out of my shield, but at least it's exciting. Like, I'm not going to ever put on a boring fight. I'm going out there to fight. I'm going out there. I'm trying to finish as fast as possible, as violent or as technical as possible.
Now, how important is that to you to be out of the gate aggressive and not maybe step back and play that feel the first round out? Because your game plan is completely different from that. So how important is that to you to be so aggressive?
I don't like feeling out, because I feel like sometimes you feel out, your opponent might start to get comfortable and think he's doing well. And if you let that guy get into a rhythm, then you're fighting his fight. I want to make him on his heels fighting my fight, backing him up, putting him against the cage, taking center of the cage. Center of the cage is my domain. I'm king of the cage, how you got to think of it. I'm walking out there, and I'm going to take the center, and you're going to do whatever I want to do in that fight.
Well, for everybody out there, June 29th, you know, anybody anywhere near, is it Cannonsburg, Pennsylvania?
Cannonsburg,
Pennsylvania. If you're anywhere near there, let's get out there and support him and his teammates. You know, he's. I know you got Jake Schilling for sure fighting on that card. It's a pro-am card, folks. Then you guys get out there and support some local MMA. Get out there, buy T-shirts from his sponsor. Go take your buddies out to the fights, man. And Mark, we're definitely going to have you back on. You're one of our kind of guests. You're our kind of fighter. And I want you to have a couple of minutes to be able to give shout-out to sponsors, social media, friends, family, whatever you want. It's your time.
Oh, yeah, man. Thank you. I appreciate it. I want to thank first of all, I want to thank you guys for having me on. It's always cool to get to do interviews. I want to thank my wife, Nicole. She's the greatest thing that's ever happened to me, and she keeps me grounded and keeps me focused. My daughter, Aubrey, and my friends and family for always coming out and supporting me. A couple of my main sponsors, Intimidation Clothing, Blasphemy Clothing, JSK Flooring, Double D Saloon, that's my official after party. So if anybody even can't make it to the fights and you're local and you want to come out, we're going to be drinking down Double D's after the fight. Also got to thank, who else is there? I got so many sponsors, man. It's hard trying to remember them. Critter Control, Giant Eagle actually sponsors me now. They're pretty cool. Lucci's Collision Center. I think that's it sponsor-wise. So
That's all I really got to say. If you can follow me at Mark Jericho MMA on Twitter, you can follow me at M Jericho MMA on Instagram, or just Mark Jericho on Facebook.
Hey, I got to tell you what, Intimidation, we're huge, huge fans of what they do and how they support MMA fighters. So I'm really glad.
Oh, yeah, Luke's an awesome guy, man. Yeah, he's a great guy.
Believe it or not, they are going to have their very first event that they're sponsors of here in Washington on the Pacific Coast, the Pacific Northwest Coast. So, yeah, they're doing big things.
Nice.
They're now out. Yeah, they're all the way over here on the West Coast now.
Nice. Yeah, they were one of the official sponsors for the first Pinnacle show, and I mean they've been sponsoring me since I think it was my sixth or seventh amateur fight. So I've been working with Luke for a little while now.
It's funny that we realized that he does go out and find those young talented kids and stick with them, and you're one of them. So it's so great to have you on tonight, brother. We really appreciate you taking this time.
Oh, thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it.
And you're gonna
go
be back.
Go Eagles?
We'll
is it Go Eagles? Go Eagles or Steelers?
Wait, oh, come on! I hate the Steelers too. I pretend to be a Steelers fan when I'm in Cleveland. But I'm
if
actually a Bears fan. It's a sad day. It's a sad
Dallas,
day. What's that?
Don't say Dallas.
No, I'm a Bears fan. It's actually a sad day because my favorite player, Brian Urlacher, retired today. So I'm a little heartbroken today.
Hey, Mark, it's better than seeing him don a different jersey, though, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. We still got Jay Cutler, so I'm still happy.
Hell yeah, man. And my guy, Bree Marsh, dude. Old Marshall, man. I love that dude.
Yeah, Marshall the Cutler is like guaranteed fantasy gold.
Yes.
as long as you don't get negative points for interception.
Hey, we're going to pay some bills. Mark, I thank you so much. Lepaki, we'll see you on the other side of the break. Fans, get out there.
Not if I see you first.
All right, man, take care.
Hey, listen up. If you're in contact sports, the American Dental Association recommends that mouth guards be worn during all heavy contact sports. So do what MMA Meltdown does and contact the best in the biz, Clench Custom Mouth Guards. Clench Custom Mouth Guards fabricates custom mouth guards for all professional and amateur sports, mixed martial arts, boxing, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, basketball, football, lacrosse, hockey, as well as many other sports. These mouth guards are for any sport where any form of contact may occur. Get your custom mouth guard today at GetClinched.com. Again, that's GetClinched.com for all of your mouth guard needs.
Monster Voodoo Machine. Everybody, check out our sponsors.
Wow, that's a little loud. Turn that down.
Okay, everybody, Clinch, Custom Mouth Guards, Intimidation Clothing, Tank Crimes, Central Oregon Trike, Vision Smoke Shop, Draco Impact Armor, Pro-Am Belts, Game Changer Clothing, Prime Fitness, Big D's Nightclub, Crossroader Clothing, Ink Tank Tattoo, Hype Fight Store, NeverCap.ca, Brawl Base, and 24NLV on Twitter. We're back.
Carl, why do you guys use .ca in Canada?
Well, some people do. It's just a Canadian domain.
Interesting. Interesting. I got to give a big shout out to my brother, Eddie Blackburn, today. Yankees lost, bro, but we're still in first place, and the Red Sox are still looking up at us. So at the end of the day, even though we lost, we're still ahead of the Red Sox, and that's all that matters.
That's very true. Hey, and anybody in California that's a female kickboxer, Art of War is looking for fighters for Saturday's show. They've had a couple of fallouts. Contact Professor Tom at 1-209-482-6505. Or find him on Facebook.
Very, very nice.
Yeah, so I guess we're going to be kicking it with your buddy next, correct?
Yeah, he should be calling here any time. So, hey, what do you think about
this
Mark Jericho guy? I want to go watch him fight now. I forgot to ask him, dude, if when he fought on 420, if the arena was, like, smoky and made the fight difficult. Here's a super awesome thing about Mark Jericho. I've only picked one of his fights. But I am 1-0 with a perfect. I did pick Mark Jericho via first-round submission, and he went out and did that for me. So while I forgot to thank him when he was on air, I want to thank him now because I was kind of baller.
Dude.
So, Skippy, who are you going to call out tonight? Are you going to call somebody out? That would be super awesome.
Yeah, I'm going to call out all these people that are jumping on bandwagons. Bandwagon jumpers, look. I've heard every possible story, dude, from good, bad, and indifferent, man. Just let the shit play out. Why do people got to stick their nose in it? It's getting stupid. I'm sick of hearing about it. It's not right, but I'm sick of hearing about it.
That's why I put my post up yesterday, scumbags calling out scumbags.
Yeah, dude, that's what it is. It's getting stupid.
And Matt
Kovacs
had a great post on it. He put the scumbag scuffle.
Yeah. You know, hey, I will tell you what, I'm going to call out Josh Barnett for returning to the UFC. Josh, if you're listening, Lepaki, that's my name, I will fight you anywhere at any time.
Just keep volunteering me, bro. Just keep volunteering me. Right now we've got a great guest with us. He is the head of a gym that's very close to my heart in Eugene, Oregon. We're now joined by Ryan Kelly. Ryan, are you with us?
I am. I'm here. How you doing?
Oh, man, we're doing great, buddy. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. Doing well.
How's the evening at the gym?
It's good, man. Good. Working some half guard stuff, trying to work on the bottom side of the half guard, and good class, a lot of good training.
Nice, nice. Now, for everybody that's not familiar, you are with Northwest Martial Arts. Why don't you give them kind of a brief history of the gym and what you guys kind of have going on in your philosophy?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. We started training in Jeet Kune Do, which was Bruce Lee's concepts and philosophies. And we got involved in Jeet Kune Do. And, of course, through Jeet Kune Do, got introduced to all the other arts that are, you know, popularized today by mixed martial arts like Muay Thai and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and wrestling, things like that. We kind of got turned on to trying to train a little bit of everything and being willing to look at all different systems and all different styles. And that was back in like 1991 when we started training. In 1995, our instructor that was here in Eugene left and left us on our own. And so we decided that we were going to have to kind of keep it together ourselves if we wanted to do it. We were just kids. I think we were like 17, 18 years old. There was three original owners, myself and then another guy named Ryan and another guy named Harold. And we just kept the training going, kept the training alive. We started teaching a few students kind of here and there. And then I left to go to Phoenix, Arizona, and to Southern California because there was just no black belt Brazilian jiu-jitsu here. And I got really intrigued around 1995, 96. I got really intrigued with the Brazilian jiu-jitsu. So I just had to seek out better instruction. I had the opportunity to apprentice under Hickson Gracie and spend time training under Hickson at the Gracie Academy, and then also under a top black belt that's in Phoenix, Arizona, named Megaton Dias, a famous jiu-jitsu competitor. I spent a couple years out training with those guys on the road and then pulled it back here to Eugene. And we're still, that's when I came back is when we really turned it into a full-time gym and made it our full-time profession to teach martial arts. And we're still teaching all the same stuff, the Jeet Kune Do, the Muay Thai, the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. We have an MMA team that competes under our gym. We've kind of got a little bit of everything going on.
Yeah, and then you guys also have a competition Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu team?
Yep, absolutely. Yep, we got a really strong Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu competition team. It's funny because we were kind of a Jeet Kune Do and a more striking art when we started, but all the instructors fell in so much in love with the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu that now we've kind of become known as a strong Jiu-Jitsu gym. But we have more Jiu-Jitsu competitors than any other types of competitors at the gym. A lot of people really like the Jiu-Jitsu side of the competition. I think that because it's good, hard competition, but you get to avoid getting, you know, punched and kneed in your head. And I think that there's a lot of people that the grappling without the striking, it just really appeals to a lot of people. So we definitely have a few Muay Thai competitors and a number of mixed martial arts competitors, but we have a really strong, we got about probably about 35 strong Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu competitors.
Hey, this is Skip. Over here on this side of the mountain, you know, we have a guy who was a pro fighter. Now he's stepping away from that. And, you know, I was talking to him the other day, and he's going back to doing the traditional gi classes and everything and staying away from mixed martial arts. And one of the things he was talking to me about, and I'm just curious with you and your group, he feels that the traditional gi style grappling, he finds it much more intriguing and interesting and much more fulfilling than when he was fighting in a cage. Do you see that with your students? They find that this aspect of martial arts is what entices them the most?
You know, that's really common. You know, that's really a really popular, really common sentiment. I hear that a lot from people. And we have a lot of people like Evan Dunham, who was one of my guys for 8 years before he went to Vegas to align under Extreme Couture and continue his UFC career. There was nobody really at my gym that no more lightweights that could hang with him, and he really needed to expand his training. But even though he's, you know, a top UFC competitor, I was just talking to him about that last time he was here training at the gym, and he said, "Man, I just got to put on the gi and go out there and get the gi game going on too." And a lot of people, once they get used to that game, there's so many more variables. There's so many more options. There's so many more grips. There's so many more controls, and it really makes it a lot more mental of a game. There's just, instead of only there being one or two choices of grips, there might be 10 choices of grips and a lot more options for choking and angles for sweeps and angles for attacks. So you get used to the multitude of options and being able to set people up, being able to use a lot of trickery and stuff. The game of mixed martial arts and fighting in the cage, I mean, it's an awesome game, but it's a lot more raw. Your hands are taped up and gloved up, and everybody's sweaty, and it's hard to get grips and it's hard to get controls. So you end up with a lot more, you know, wrestling style top game, top control, and mixed in with the elbows and the striking. And it's an awesome sport as well, but a lot more, you know, there's a lot more conditioning, a lot more toughness. The gi game, you could really be just a lot more technical than the other person. Even if you're not as, you know, conditioned, you're not as strong, you can use trickery. And I think that the multitude of options really appeals to a lot of people for sure.
Now, obviously, you know, you watch MMA, you know that it's a sport growing and a lot of people out there support it. In your mind, how important is it that the MMA community support organizations like Metamoris right now and their growth?
Oh, man. Yeah, it's huge. It's huge because, you know, the caliber of mixed martial arts, people like you say, I mean, it's just, it's continued to rise through the roof. And that's because they're getting better and better at all of the different technical components of that go into mixed martial arts. I mean, the boxing is getting so much more solid and true. I mean, not really anybody comes out and just brawls anymore. I mean, I guess there's a few people, but for the most part, the boxing is getting technical, where so many of these guys could take their boxing straight out of the cage and take it right into the ring and be successful just hands only against other boxers. And the level of jiu-jitsu competitors, you know, now with Jacare making his, you know, entrance into the UFC, and obviously with Damian Maya and people like this, you know, you get this high caliber of jiu-jitsu. But, you know, the day is coming where people are going to have the hand skills of the most elite boxers, but they need to have those wrestling skills, those jiu-jitsu skills. And by being able to compete regularly in jiu-jitsu and hone those ground skills without the striking mixed and without the injury, you know, potential of MMA, these fighters can just keep raising their ground caliber. And then when they bring it into the octagon, it's just going to make that much more exciting of fights. I think MMA fans need to continue to support wrestling as much as they can. They need to continue to support Muay Thai. And anybody that's trying to run Muay Thai smokers and events and things like that, as well as these big jiu-jitsu, the Abu Dhabis and the Metamoris and all of these types of events, because they're just going to hone the fighters that much more. And when they bring it into the octagon, we'll all get to benefit from their level being higher.
Now, one last question before I let Lopaki jump back in. As a fan, when you heard that Metamoris was going to be putting on professional BJJ matches, were you like super excited to see finally a payday at a level that high for those athletes?
Oh man, yeah, it's been a long, long time coming. I mean, the jiu-jitsu and the grappling, you know, people, they work so hard at what they do and train so long, train so many hours to not have any paid venue to be able to showcase those skills and those talents, man. It's a real shame. You know, it's sad when people are at the level of a multi-time world champion and they still have to show up and pay their fee to compete. You know, it's a shame. I believe that, you know, more and more that with, you know, the jiu-jitsu turning the corner and moving into paid, you know, paid tournaments and bigger paydays, more opportunity, you're just going to draw a bigger talent pool. More and more people will get involved, and that'll just grow the sport of submission wrestling, the sport of jiu-jitsu, and by default, the mixed martial arts, you know, right along with it.
Now, next week, my coach, Seth Dawson, is headed down to the Mundial. How awesome of an opportunity is that, and for guys out here on this coast, now that they've transitioned that up from Brazil to the States?
Oh, man, yeah, all the big stuff is right here on the West Coast. You know, we got the Pan Ams and the Worlds right here, the two big ones, you know, right here close by, just, you know, one state away down in beautiful, sunny Southern California. And it's an easy trip for us. It gives us the opportunity to compete at the highest level against world-class players just right close to home. It was a pain for everybody when the Worlds were in Rio. That was just a difficult trek to make. But now anybody that wants to put themselves up against the world's best, they don't have any excuse, because it's just a hop, skip, and a jump away. It's awesome. It's awesome for us on the West Coast.
Yeah, I think it's great. Now, you've been in the game for a really long time. What are you seeing that's the biggest difference? I mean, because now we see guys entering into competition, MMA, that have such a vast variety of mixed martial arts as a background in comparison to, say, in the early 90s or late 90s, when guys were really focusing on that one form. What do you think led the mind frame change in that?
Well, I think success. You know, I think that the people that were more well-rounded and could bring more to the table had the opportunity to vary it up and to be more successful. The people that were really, you know, just had one particular game plan, one, you know, particular style, could only really fight just one way. I mean, sometimes you can force that and be successful, but the fighters that, you know, had a deeper skill set, more variables in their arsenal, just started to be more and more successful. And so I think people realized, like, they couldn't walk in anymore and just be a wrestler and expect to be able to defend against the submissions, or could just be a boxer and expect to not end up on their back. I think now people realize that even if you're the best boxer and you got the best hands in your division, if you don't have good takedown defense and you can't crush the ground and pound when you end up on your back, then you're not going to get the opportunity to showcase your boxing skills. You're going to constantly be taken down, or you're going to be pressed up against the cage, or you're going to be on your back, and nobody's going to care how good your hands are if you don't have the ability to let them fly. And I think now people realize that, okay, I'm a boxer, I better have solid takedown defense, and I better have defense against the ground and pound and the submission, so that I have the opportunity to be able to showcase my hands and do what I do. I think that's, you know, one of the biggest things. The other thing that I think is that these days there's more and more athletes from a young age that are focused on mixed martial arts as a sport and as a career opportunity. Previously, it seemed that people would make that decision later in life. You'd have athletes like a Randy Couture or Dan Henderson or somebody that was at the end maybe of a wrestling career, or, you know, had participated in another sport and then made a choice that they wanted to kind of transition into mixed martial arts and learn that skill set. And so later in life, they started picking up the submission game and the striking game. I mean, you can see, like, obviously Randy Couture had a big evolution in terms of his punching, just like Damian Maya, great jiu-jitsu guy, but came in with just horrible, you know, boxing and kickboxing, and now he's had the opportunity to clean all that up. But what you're seeing more and more these days is people who have the athleticism of a Randy Couture or Damian Maya, you know, skill set, but they, from an early age, started training well-rounded. They started training and understanding, not that they were going to be a wrestler or not that they were going to be a boxer, but they knew from the beginning that they were going to be an MMA fighter and that they had to be complete. They had to have the whole package. And I think the more and more we see talented athletes that come into the mixed martial arts having been prepared from day one, rather than making a switch after a different, you know, successful career, I think the caliber of fighters is just going to continue. I mean, it's on the rise all the time, and it's just going to get tougher and tougher in there.
Now, I know that you guys like the competition aspect of the game, but another portion of what you guys do, and something that both you and Harold and all the folks there that work there are very passionate about, is the self-defense aspect that you guys also stress. And can you maybe talk about that a little bit?
Sure. You know, the difference, you know, between mixed martial arts, obviously, and sport jiu-jitsu is that there's rules, you know, and important rules. You know, I wouldn't want there to be competitions where people are trying to, you know, eye gouge each other or bite each other's noses off or, you know, whatever. The rules in mixed martial arts are there to keep the athlete safe, and that's great. But when you end up in a self-defense situation, there's a lot of other variables that will never come into play in mixed martial arts or, you know, any other sport at all. And you have to look at the reality of, you know, groin shots and headbutts and eye gouges and the possibility of weapons, the possibility of multiple opponents, you know, these kinds of things. So I think that it's important if people come into a martial arts gym and what they're looking for is self-defense, that you don't just teach them you know, whatever style of mixed martial arts that you take to, like, you know, if you're a ground and pound person and that's what you're, you know, you have strong wrestling, strong takedowns, and you like to ground and pound people. If you have a female come in, you know, who's 45 years old and, you know, weighs, you know, 120 pounds or something, and you're going to say, okay, well, just, you know, if you get attacked by some guy who's 6'6" and 300 pounds, just lift him up, slam him on the ground, and, you know, pound him out. And I think that it's going to be a hard sell. You know, I think that you have to have, if you're going to teach self-defense or you're going to incorporate that into what you do, you have to have a different mentality, a different skill set. So that's where we kind of go back to the Jeet Kune Do, you know, Bruce Lee's concepts and philosophies. And we look at, like, the Filipino weapon systems. We train against knives and against, you know, blunt objects like stick and bat and things like that. We look at multiple opponents, try to make a game plan. You know, if it's a 2-on-1 or a 3-on-1, you know, what can you do if you can get to a weapon? What can you do if you can't? We look at the close quarter, the inside fighting of the Filipino arts, like thumbing the eye, kneeing the groin, headbutts, things like that. And we still train a lot of the same stuff that we train in mixed martial arts. I mean, for self-defense, you got to have good boxing defense. You got to have good takedown defense. You got to know how to play your guard. You should be able to hit submissions off your back. I mean, a lot of it crosses over. I mean, a lot of our mixed martial arts class and our self-defense classes, if you came in, they might be doing the exact same thing on any given day. But in the self-defense classes, we're going to go even further and get into that. Well, what if they outweigh you by 150 pounds? What if they, you know, can out kick, punch, and wrestle you? How can you cheat to win? How can you attack vulnerable targets like the eyes and the groin and things like that? Because we want to give people in our community the ability to protect themselves and defend themselves. And unfortunately, you know, in mixed martial arts and boxing and jiu-jitsu and stuff, there's weight categories, there's rules, and there's a lot of limitations that we can get around out on the street if need be.
I just want to ask a quick question. With what you were just talking about, how important are teaching some of these moves that you can only do learning gi, you know, to, you know, chokes, you know, with the sleeve and the collar? Do you implement that in the self-defense training?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, obviously there's some angles that are really specific to sport jiu-jitsu that just you couldn't make work against average clothing. You know, if someone was just wearing a t-shirt or a sweatshirt or something, there's some gi chokes that are just like really specifically the person would have to have a gi, you know, on. But the majority of them, I mean, certainly more than half of the gi chokes that we apply in jiu-jitsu can be made really easily against somebody that's wearing, you know, even just a t-shirt, just a cotton t-shirt. One of the things that we teach people is to not just grab the collar of the t-shirt, because if you just grab like the collar of your own shirt with both hands and pull as hard as you can, you're likely to be able to tear it or stretch it. But what you want to do is you want to gather up big chunk of material. You want to kind of pull their shirt up and get a good grip on a lot of material, because if you can get a lot of material, then when you pull it or tug on it, it's going to hold tight. So you got to kind of make sure that you set your grips on their shirts appropriately. But absolutely, a lot of those chokes that we apply with the gi can be directly applied. I mean, we've played with it. We've done it even against little flimsy tank tops and, you know, wife beaters and all sorts of different things. You can just, if you get enough material together, you can choke people with just about anything they're wearing.
Wow.
Now, one of the things when I first started talking to you guys was you do a lot of seminars with women that have been the victim of maybe sexual assault. What led you guys down that path, and how hard are some of those stories that you hear?
Oh man, yeah, that's one of the, I mean, it's like one of the greatest things that I do, and also one of the most difficult and heart-wrenching things that I do. You know, I got involved in women's self-defense kind of by accident, you know, or just kind of by default, I guess, because I started getting requests from women in our area here to do self-defense workshops, like women self-defense workshops. And I thought, you know, I don't, it's not really my forte. I've never really been trained on women-specific self-defense. And so I started to look into other women self-defense programs, figuring that there was good women self-defense available. And I found two other programs in our area that were going at that time. They've since shut down. But I quickly realized that they were teaching like personal empowerment and assertiveness training and good stuff, you know, that the women, you know, should have for avoiding self-defense. But when it came to the actual fighting stuff, they were teaching like really outdated karate type stuff. There was a female who was a great motivator for other women, and women really liked her, but, you know, she got like a black belt in karate like in the 1970s and like, you know, was teaching just really goofy blocks and reverse punches with the hands down by the hips and just things that I knew from looking at it was not going to work in a self-defense situation for anybody, but especially not for a female, you know, up against a bigger, stronger attacker. And so I started to realize that women need to have the tricks of Jeet Kune Do, and also especially the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, being able to fight off of your back. And when someone attacks a female and is trying to assault them, they're going to always try to put them into a jiu-jitsu position. They're going to try to get them on their back. They're going to try to pin them down, hold them down, and control them. Learning how to escape your hips, learning how to choke, arm bar, up kick, all that kind of stuff was essential. And there just was nobody else doing it. Nobody was teaching the women the things that I knew that they needed to know to be successful in that environment. So if no one else was going to do it, I started to do it. And it was about that time that I started getting serious about teaching some women self-defense workshops that I met my wife-to-be, and she was involved in women self-defense at the University of Oregon, had taken the courses there and had kind of found the same thing, that there just wasn't, when it came to the actual fighting application, they really didn't have it. But she had been through the women's self-defense program and really had the assertiveness training and the avoidance training, which is the piece of it that I didn't have at all. And so we joined forces, and she taught me about all the statistics and about the empowerment and those types of skills. And I taught her about the serious fighting and the self-defense side of it. And together, we've just continued to offer free workshops. I'm the head women's self-defense instructor at the University of Oregon now as well. They offered me that position about 5 years ago or so. I've been doing that now at the University of Oregon, and been just teaching workshops all throughout the state, and even I've gone out of state several times to teach women self-defense workshops. We're kind of pushing that side of it now, and trying to really, it's just like community service. Like the more women that have these skill sets, the better for our society, the better for our culture, because women, especially young women, are just targeted for assaults, and especially sexual assaults, all the time. And so it's something that I can do to help people in the community, and it's something that makes me feel good. And unfortunately, there's just not a lot of other people out there doing it, so we picked up the reins and we're doing it.
Yeah, I think that's totally awesome. And I mean, one of the things I first learned about down there, and I think that people should understand that, you know, even if you have a disability, that, you know, you can still learn mixed martial arts and use it effectively. I heard the story about the blind gentleman that was constantly harassed. I mean, I'm not sure if people are familiar with downtown Eugene, but there's like a huge like homeless, destitute person problem that like seems to be uncontrollable, and these people just kind of run roughshod over the community. But you guys have gone out and actually helped people, and this person, what happened to be blind, and came in to learn Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and was able to successfully defend himself out on the street.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's been a number of people that when they came in to train with us were in positions where they had been, harassed, or in an abusive relationship or stalking situation, or they had a disability that people took advantage of them. I mean, it's terrible. You know, we've had people that have come in that you know, are blind or in a wheelchair or have other issues. And it's like so disheartening to hear that when certain people, you know, obviously scumbags, but when psychopaths see somebody that's blind or somebody that's already, you know, struggling, they look at them as an easy target, an easy victim. Like, it was dumbfounding for me to train with our blind student and to realize how much of a target he is for attack and for theft and for just general abuse and ridicule and stuff. I think it's such an unfortunate statement on our world, but when people see somebody that they perceive as weak or incapable of protecting themselves, a lot of people just see a big bullseye. They just see a big target. And man, if I can empower those people that need self-defense the most, people that have been victimized, people that have been, you know, raped or beaten or, you know, harassed or whatever, and we can take them and we can empower them and teach them to be able to stand up for themselves and protect themselves, defend themselves, like, man, that makes my heart feel really good. I feel like that's what I want to do for the rest of my life. I want to just keep empowering people to be able to be strong and confident and be able to protect and defend themselves. Like, that's what brings me the most joy out of everything. Like, I love seeing our fighters win in the cage. I love watching our competitors win out on the mats in jiu-jitsu. Like, I love seeing people accomplish their goals with martial arts. But being able to take somebody who walks in and feels powerless, and being able to build them up and make them capable of protecting and standing up for themselves, like, man, that's the greatest.
Skippy.
Let me turn my mic back on. We've been talking about martial arts. We've been talking about martial arts all night. I got to ask you, as a fan of martial arts, do you miss Saturday morning Kung Fu Theater?
Yeah.
I do. And I'm just curious.
Yeah, you know, yeah, now you got to try to search out everything online for obscure Kung Fu films stuff. But, yeah, you can't really get enough of those old school karate and kung fu and ninja flicks. There's a lot of classics out there.
Oh yeah, well, you know, with Lepaki and you guys touching on, you know, some of the handicaps, you know, obviously, you know, the whole Trail of the Blind Samurai, you know, that series. But
yeah,
if you're ever, believe it or not, check oddball grocery stores, like country grocery stores that are smaller. I find a lot of oddball kung fu movies in there. Like, I don't know why they'll be in there, and you're like, really? They're okay, and you'll buy them, because they're always cheap. But yeah, I just, you know,
yeah,
I'm a big fan of everything martial arts, and I just miss, you know, seeing stories like that, you know, like the blind,
right,
you know, samurai, you know, him coming along and the 8-part series. We still don't have anything good like that for kids anymore in the morning. It just sucks.
No, yeah, there's not, unfortunately. There needs to be. Maybe somebody at Disney is listening.
I like that.
Yeah, well, no, there needs to be, for sure. There was a lot. The martial arts provide a lot of good character and a lot of good role models, and I think that it's good for kids to be able to plug into that. That's what really got me going when I was a kid, is watching the Bruce Lee movies and watching the Kung Fu flicks and watching the Karate Kid and even the commercialized stuff. But man, it's strong people being good role models, standing up for what's good and decent, you know, in the world. And, you know, man, those are the types of lessons that are great for kids to have.
See, for me, it was Hong Kong Fooey, man. Hong Kong Fooey was what sucked me into the martial arts world.
Yeah, there you go.
But hey, now, Ip Man's got to be the best martial arts epic kind of, you know, kung fu, you know, movie that's been made in the last few years. But, I mean,
yeah,
like you touched on it. You know, what you teach in your gym is, you know, self-defense, but it comes with things like respect and honor and loyalty and, you know, compassion and other aspects. It's not like these people come in and you're cold-hearted and they don't build bonds and stuff. And, you know, it's important, I think, what you're doing, not just for athletes, not just for people who want to be, you know, a little, you know, just somebody avid in BJJ or somebody learning self-defense, you offer them a bigger picture for their whole life, and I got to commend you on that.
Yeah, thank you. That's, yeah, to me, if it was just all about, you know, how to hurt other people, like I wouldn't be into it. You know, I love the fight and I love the sport, you know, side of it, but there's more to life. You know, no matter how competitive of an athlete you are, there's going to be a time when you're not a competitive athlete. I mean, you don't see too many 70-year-old dudes out there in the cage, you know, fighting it out. There's always an end to everything competitive and to every, you know, all the physical stuff will eventually go away. For some people sooner than later, but no matter what, you know, in the end, if it's just all about, you know, developing power on your strikes or, you know, the next greatest submission that you can use, you know, that's not really worth it. Like Bruce Lee talked about the martial arts being such a powerful vehicle for self-growth, such a powerful vehicle to make you face yourself and look at your own life, look at your health, look at your, you know, well-being, look at the way that you live your life, develop compassion for other people, empathy for other people. Like when you train with other people and you're doing mixed martial arts or jiu-jitsu, I mean, you have other people's safety all the time as you're concerned. You can't just go out there and start throwing knees at people as hard as you can or start, you know, cranking on people's necks and slamming people onto their heads and necks. Like you, even when you're competing against other people, there's rules, there's respect, there's parameters to it. And I think that you start to learn how to have respect for yourself, how to respect others, how to train hard, but train safe, have empathy for others. Like it's just all sorts of really good personal and character development. And what I found is that people come in that even are like kind of prone to getting into street fights and kind of leading that negative lifestyle, as soon as they plug into the spirit of the martial arts, all that stuff starts to go away. And if they're going to challenge themselves, they'll challenge themselves in the cage against another trained fighter, and people start to just develop too much respect for themselves and for others than to go out there and to, you know, look to get in some bar fight with some, you know, drunken yokel or something. I think that for the most part, man, martial arts is nothing but positive for the majority of people. And that's the type of stuff that makes me feel good about what I want to do. That's what we really try to get across to people, try to focus on.
Now, in Eugene, you guys have the original location at 8th and Charnelton, and you just opened a facility in Bend. Do you want to give everybody the address of that one in case they want to go check it out?
Oh, man, to be honest, I don't even know that address in Bend. Today was the very first day of classes of Northwest Martial Arts Bend. We have a Facebook page for Northwest Martial Arts Bend, and the instructor there is Ryan Clark. And man, today it was like not even a grand opening. Today was just kind of the first informal day of some open classes. He's going to be doing a grand opening really soon. But to be honest, I don't even have that address off the top of my head. Just Google search Northwest Martial Arts Bend.
Well, I feel like Lepaki dropped the ball on this one, because I'm just like 5 minutes up the road. I could have gone down there and maybe taking some photos or something, man, you know, let people know. I will definitely
Skip, you're
get
afraid
there,
to walk
though.
In a gym, bro. You're afraid to walk in a gym.
I'm
don't
afraid
lie.
To work out
don't
in
lie.
A gym. I'm not afraid to walk in. I'm afraid to work out. I'll walk into a gym to do interviews all day. It's just when the guys, like, pick this up and run, I'm like, really? I got a car and a truck.
Yeah, man. Well, Clark will put you to training right away, man. I mean, the moment that you walk in to take a picture, he's just going to throw some gloves on you, slap a mouthpiece in, and you'll be going before you know it.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, and I definitely will be telling all the fighters that live in the Bend area, because just recently quite a few gyms have shut their door. They need a place to train. Dude, I will pass your name on to everybody. I think that's great that you're, you know, out here in Central Oregon supporting the fighters here. Great to hear.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, we saw that. That's why that was, you know, the main driving force behind us
wanting to get out there to Bend. We saw that, you know, that the MMA gym, you know, that was there, the strong, you know, the stronger the gyms have kind of closed their doors and went away. So we're going to keep it strong in that, community, keep it growing.
And that address is 555 Northwest Arizona Avenue, Suite 30 in Bend. You can call them at 541-232-6300 also.
Yep. Perfect. Thank you.
Hey, you're welcome. Coach Ryan, I wanted to say, man, I appreciate you guys at Northwest Martial Arts opening the doors to me and allowing me to train at your facility. I've had a great time working with Coach Seth. We want to give you a second to give any shout-outs that you might want to give out, and then we'll be wrapping this segment up.
Yeah, great. Yeah, it's been great having you, Rob. You know, you're doing great, man. I look forward to your future with us, and I think that you're going to do well. And we're super happy to have you there. And I love what you're doing with the radio show here. I think this is fantastic. So we all of our guys, you know, to the rest of the team at Northwest Martial Arts, Coach Seth and Coach Harold and Ryan Clark out in Bend, and all of the rest of the guys from our team, we appreciate the opportunity to be able to be on and talk about what we do. We love this stuff.
That is very true, and you guys can find out. You can come and take the beginner's class with me on Mondays and Wednesdays at 12:45. It's a blast. And if my old ass can do it, so can your guys'. Hey,
Ryan,
thanks,
Rob.
Appreciate you taking the time to come on tonight, man. And I will see you guys not Monday, since you decided to just take the day off for the holiday, but on Wednesday.
Sounds good, Rob. Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate the time.
Hey, anytime, sir.
All right, man. Take care.
Hey,
Carl, that's a cool son of a bitch, man. And I'm really happy to hear that there's a gym. I'm going to make a post right now and share the page.
Yeah, man, it's a great opportunity. I know that Brent Primus was over there a couple weeks back. What is all that? Somebody's playing some ninja movies. That was Shokasugi.
What are we doing? We're listening to some Saturday morning kung fu, it sounds like.
Dude, that was Shokasugi. I could tell just by the accent. Shokasugi, like the greatest American ninja of my youth. That dude was in all the fucking movies, dude. I think there was even one with him and Rucker Hauer where Rucker Hauer played a blind guy. You remember that one, Skip?
Oh, he
was
definitely.
Like the blind martial arts. And yes. He was like fighting the guy all the time.
Yeah, dude, I've got a couple hundred of those movies. I buy the 40-pack box sets. I love it. I mean, I've got Street Fighter, Sister Street Fighter, Cousin Street Fighter, Grandma Lived Down the Road Street Fighter. I got them all. I got so many. Dude, I'll tell you what, though. I'm really impressed with, what was it, the Golden Flower? That was a great one.
I thought you were going to say you're impressed with the Golden Shower you got.
No, that one, the Flight of the Heroin, that was a great one, too. Hey, look at this. We're having a party in the studio, dude. This is straight up. I got a couple people up in here chilling.
Dude, who?
Hey, say hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Good. I'm good.
Hey, you should tell Skippy to mail me some edibles.
Okay, I'll tell him.
No, tell him right now while you're on air.
See, this is what we do. Can you give me 2 minutes? No, you're fine. You ain't got to leave. We're setting up the show. We're passing around a fatty. Everybody's having a good time. See? Carl from Canada was watching on camera, but it died, so he's us out.
You shut me
off. We have some great guests tonight. It's unfortunate that we couldn't get Alana on, but understandably she's busy with fight week and obligations to George De La Rosa and Championship Fighting Alliance down there in Miami.
I want to give a big shout-out to Ashley Evans-Smith. Hopefully she does great work this weekend in her fight against Anna Barone and winds up in the finals. And I hope that Alana Jones goes out there and does what a lot of us don't think is possible and defeats Fallon Fox and puts an end to that. I don't even know if it would be like a crazy train or a hype train or like.
I'll tell you this much. She does what I think she can do and knock out Fallon. She'll be live on the road show Friday night bragging about it.
Well, I hope so. That'd be great.
Hey, and we're really proud to sponsor her no matter who her opponent is.
Well, yeah.
Okay, guys, Eagle.
What? Okay, well,
I got an 18-year-old Chinese girl tied up in my trunk. I got to go.
Hey, yeah, don't quit dropping them off at my house. Quit dropping them off at my house. I'm getting tired of having to explain this shit. No, you're not home. You're not home. You're not home. Dong Kim, he live in South Korea. So, Carl, next weekend people can find you Battle of the Border, right?
Is that next weekend, June 1st? That is next weekend, yeah. June 1st, Battle for the Border 2. Can't wait. Excited. Haven't been to an event since October, so I'm ready.
Well, dude, that's what happens when you get fucking snowed in, bro.
No, it's because I live in the middle of nowhere.
I mean, that's got to be frustrating. I mean, it frustrates me having to drive like 5 hours to events up in Tacoma or Seattle, and I couldn't imagine, like, how far is the drive to Battle at the Border?
This one's not bad. It'll only be, like, 2.5-3 hours or something.
So how is that Battle at the Border if you're not even by the border?
Relatively close. It's near the BC-Alberta border.
Oh, tricky guys you are. Tricky guys you are.
And, For Battle
so it's
for
not
the Border
a
US 1.
Canada thing. It's not a U.S.-Canada thing. Is it an Alberta-BC thing?
Well, that's sort of where it started with the first one, yeah. Although, they brought up Lee Morrison. So, it's Battle for the Border, Battle for whatever border you want to have, I guess. But yeah, it was originally, sort of a BC versus Alberta kind of main card for the first one. And, I think a little bit even in this one, it's lining up that way. I know they're still juggling fights around a little bit. So I'm going to be interviewing Isaac Hockley on Saturday night inside the asylum. So we'll get the update then and see where it all stands.
That'll be sick, dude. I'm just stoked that you're going to have your camera at an event because when your pictures hit the site, dude, I get stuck there for like an hour and a half. And I'm sure that you're probably more excited than I am that you get to use the camera at an event.
I'm pretty excited, all right. Yeah, like I said, it's been a while, and it usually is for me. And then I get back-to-back, one weekend followed by another. And then who knows, I'll probably be sitting for 6 months again, but whatever. We'll see what this new BC Athletics Commission does for me up here, which, doesn't really look good as far as I'm concerned for smaller regional shows. But we'll see. It's all a lot of hearsay right now. So until it's officially released and, we got some actual facts and not what I've been reading, that's just sort of where I feel right now. But we'll see.
Now, will you have, you've been on the sidelines for 6 months, haven't really used the camera. Will you have a special warm-up regimen Saturday that you'll go through to make sure you can make it through the entire event?
Stretch my finger a bunch and practice kneeling.
Will you have a Coke or two to help loosen yourself up?
No, probably not. Sorry. Sorry to disappoint you.
Well, I think you should have Coconut at every event. I think that somebody at the event, Isaac Hockley, should buy you a Coconut just because you're gracing their event with your presence.
Well, you probably would if I asked, but, it's all good, man. I just can't wait to go. I'm just excited to go. And then BFL, what the hell is it now, 24 or 25? I'm not even sure now.
June 8th in Penticton. That's looking like a pretty good card, too. So excited for that one
now
as well.
Now, that's a little
that's
bit
always...
farther drive for you.
Yeah, not a lot, though. It's totally the opposite direction, but, you know, probably a four-hour trip.
Oh, that's not too shabby. So you won't be staying at the McDonald's parking lot this time?
Yeah, I'll be sleeping in my van at Walmart probably, yeah.
What? I don't know if that's crazier than what I try to do when I just drive back from Seattle at like 1 o'clock in the morning and then it's like 6:30 when I'm walking through the door and I'm like barely, I've got two holding my eyes open.
I've done that a couple times too. We'll see how it goes. I might drive halfway back and pull off on a logging road somewhere too. Who knows? See how the evening goes.
It's a big couple of weeks for Battlefield, Carl. They got an event this weekend in Vancouver, and then they got that event in Penticton the next weekend.
Yeah. I don't know if the Penticton one will be an eye pay-per-view, but the one coming up this weekend, they'll be broadcasting on BattlefieldFL.com, I believe it is.
Yes, that sounds correct.
I believe that's what it is. So, you know, I'm going to try to catch that if I can, but we'll see. I'm still trying to get my damn chicken coop ready.
You still working on this, bro?
Yeah, man, you know, I'm not a carpenter. I'm doing the best I can. Quit hollering at me.
Well, you work in the petroleum field, so I figure you would just hire somebody for that.
Yeah, right.
I mean,
speaking
Carl, you
gas,
work in the gas. You work in the gas industry.
I'm really curious if your guys' gas is spiking down there right now. The price is going through the roof down there too, or what?
Dude, Carl, last Monday, a week ago Monday, I think, I filled up at $3.39 a gallon. By Friday, it was $3.95. Five days,
you're
65 cents.
You guys are spiking even more than we are then. Crazy.
Yeah, this is a stupid thing called Memorial Day down here where all these cocksuckers at the gas station think that they can just start price gouging for like 3 weeks in advance.
Yeah, I know everybody likes to blame the gas station, but in most cases that's not the case. It's the refinery selling the gas to the gas stations. But, you know, there's probably some of that going on in places, too, I would assume. But, you know, we just went through a long weekend ourselves up here. And we got to play our outro and get out of here. Shout out some sponsors. Everything's so goddamn loud tonight. What's going on here?
Okay. Skippy is fucking with shit.
Turning that off. No, Skippy's not here. Everything's loud. Anyways. Shout out to our sponsors. I'm not even going to play the music because it's fucked up. Clinch Custom Mouth Guards. Check them out. Best mouth guards on the planet. Intimidation Clothing. Those guys do more for supporting local MMA than I think any promotion or any company out there does. You know, they're sponsoring over 20 events. You know, they've got nameless fighters. They've got like 45 outlets selling their clothing line. Those guys are great. Check out Intimidation Clothing. We've got to thank Tank Crimes for supplying us with all our sounds. Central Oregon Trike, Vision Smoke Shop. What do you got to say about Vision Smoke Shop, Lapagi?
That you can now get to their location because the street's open.
Because the street opened?
Yeah, they had the street was closed or something in front of the shop there, and now the street's open because the city was doing some work on it.
Okay. Well, the street's open. Go visit Vision Smoke Shop. We got Draco Impact Armor, Pro-Am Belts, the supplier of Skippy's fabulous belt, Game Changer Clothing, Triumph Fitness. Lepaki's
a
place to hang out, I think.
That's,
big T's
that's
nightclub.
That's my belt. Yeah. That's my belt, Carl. That's my belt.
Big T's nightclub. Crossrunner Clothing. Ink Tank Tattoo. Hype Fight Store. Never Tap. Brawl Base. And 24 and LV. And that's it. We're in overtime. And I forgot what we were talking about.
No, I'm just letting Skippy clean the belt for me right now. That's the only reason he has it. Did you see the way he talks to me, Carl? Did you see this stuff in the thread? In the thread there? Do you see this?
I was just.
Are you gonna go Dana White on his ass and fine him?
I was just checking.
$20.
$20.
I think you should fine him.
$20.
You need to wire transfer me $20 via PayPal for your transgressions in the thread. You took this show from a humdinger to a scumbag scuffle just now, you bastard.
I was trying to find a humdinger sound effect, but no luck. I searched and searched, couldn't find nothing.
He's just so
rude.
I
found this one, though. Little, not quite it, but just because Skippy was talking about it earlier.
When Skippy walks down the street at night and he thinks about me, that's the sound that happens that makes him think about me. Now, I like that one.
A horse is a horse, of course, of course, and no one can talk to a horse, of course. There is, of course, unless the horse is the famous Mr. Ed. Go right to the source and ask the...
What did Skippy say? He made a rug out of him or something? I don't remember. Slippers?
Yeah, he said that he wanted to make a rug out of Mr. Ed. Like, how rude is that? At least make a rug out of silver. Wasn't that the Lone Ranger's horse was silver?
Hi-ho, silver!
Yeah.
I believe so. A little before my time, but I think you're right.
How did it skip you, or you're younger than me?
I'm older than you.
You sure about that?
I'm pretty sure. I'll be 43 in November. I'll be almost 43
Holy
when
mackerel.
I come down to Oregon. I'll be almost 43 when I come down to Oregon there in October. Be a month out. So I think I got you beat by a few years.
Yep. You were born in 1970.
Bingo, bango, bongo.
But we were born in the same decade. Hey, Bill Smallwood is joining you in the asylum this weekend, isn't he?
Yeah, that should be interesting. Going to talk with him. He's going to be at an event, so I don't know. See how it all goes. But he's cornering a fighter and whatnot. But, yeah, we're going to bring him on for 10 or 15 minutes, hopefully, and see what's going on. And then we're going to bring on Isaac Hockley and talk some battle for the border.
And now, who does that show with you? Is that Pablo Diablo, Spencer, and Caitlin? She's still confused in going to the University of Oregon. Deany, I talked to her about this daily, Carl. Maybe if you could help with the intervention, we can prevent her from becoming an Oregon schmuck.
I'm glad she's going to a college. I don't know enough about your guys' colleges to have an opinion. So I'll just trust you on that. I'll leave that in your hands. How about?
I'll take care of it. I'll work on it. We can't have her doing
okay.
that.
Speaking of Caitlin, everybody needs to get out there and order her wristbands and help the girl out. It's a featured article on MMAMadhouse.com. Everything's there you need to know about it. Go check it out. And, buy a $4 wristband and do that. Back to Inside the Asylum. It'll be me and me in London, I guess, or this weekend. Inside of the Asylum is, I sort of want to do that. I want to bring everybody from the team on that show, here and there, just give them all a little practice and have some fun at the same time. So, Spencer's been on there, and Caitlin, and Kari's joined us. London, Matthew is there. We phoned Skippy in his car. We still need to get you, Jason Gemmer. There's a bunch of guys. I want to get everybody on there eventually.
That's my goal.
How is Josh Oliveira been? Have you talked to him lately?
Not for a while. He's sort of out of the game right now. He's busy doing other things, so which is really unfortunate because that dude has got unbelievable talent. You got to do what you got to do. You got to make a living. You got to pay your bills. You got to do what you got to do. So, but I'm a big fan of Josh Oliveira. Hopefully he can come back and get back at her here somewhere down the road. But no, I haven't talked to him for probably a couple months now.
Dude, I can really relate. I can really relate to that situation. Every day I wake up and I go to my day job and I just sit there and I think, God dang, I really would rather be just talking MMA all day. And then it was so weird because today I had an appointment with a guy, and I talked to him for like an hour and 45 minutes. And we talked about everything from his business to advertising over the last 40 years since he first became a business owner to the military industrial complex, all the way down to he wanted to make sure that I understood this one thing. And he told me, he looks at me and he goes, "You need to do what you have a passion for." And I was just like, whoa, man, that's really, really kind of creepy that you would say that to me. Because, like, every day I wake up and I, like, have that fight with myself. And I'm like, I just end up pulling into the parking lot and going to my cubicle anymore. And then, like, to randomly hear that, you know, it was just kind of strange.
I understand. I hear you. I go through the same thing every day myself. I'd rather be, you know, working on the website, doing what we do, than, you know, gouging people for gas. But,
you know, how often do you hear about that, Carl? And then let's just clarify, you don't get a cut when the prices go up.
No. there's different types of service stations out there. There's you know, private ones like the one I work at that's owned by a guy and his son. And then there's the corporate ones that are owned by, you know, Mobil or Shell or whatever. And so I can't speak for those ones. I don't know how they work. But for the little mom and pop shop like that I run, you know, it's a tough business, man. There's no money in fuel. There might look like there is, but there really isn't. It's the government that's making all the money and the refineries that are making all the money. Up here in Canada, it's especially the government making all of the money. You know, they're taking almost half, and, you know, they have no expense. The refinery, at least, you know, is employing people and, you know, paying a lot of that money out. I mean, they're still making billions, obviously, but, you know, really the evil party up here is the government. You know, they could drop our fuel prices huge. If we're talking by the gallon, up here right now would be, just about $6 a gallon.
Holy fuck balls.
Yeah, so you can say just about $3 of that per gallon would be going straight into the government's pocket in taxes for nothing.
And then they hit you as a citizen for 40% of the money you make.
Yeah, you could probably say it's something close to that. Yep. And then people holler at me for price gouging, which is so out to lunch, but I'm so used to it, I don't care.
See, that used to be my favorite. Like, when I was in high school, like, the ultimate job to have where I lived at was, if you're a dude, you wanted to, like, pump gas somewhere, because, like, then you could, like, talk to all your friends still, but still be working. And so it used to always be awesome when people would come in and they'd start yelling at me. They would start yelling at me about the prices, and I'm like, I'm 16. Like, what the fuck are you yelling at me for?
Yeah, I'm going to figure it out here for you right now. Exactly what it is per gallon up here.
I was like,
I
just can't believe it.
Is.
You guys sell by the liter, right?
3.78, yep. 3.78 liters to a gallon equals... Okay, I was a little wrong. We're at about $5.30 a gallon.
Jesus, man. That's like going to Washington.
Is that what it is up there, too?
No, it was like, I was up in Washington 2 weeks ago for Cage Warrior Combat, judging that event, and the price of gas was like $4.09 or something where I ended up having to fill up at, like, when I was leaving the event. It was horrible.
$4.09.
And they don't even have anybody pump it. Do you guys have, like, a person that pumps the gas at least, or are you self-service?
Self-serve, yeah.
See, like, at least here in Oregon, if I'm paying $3.95 a gallon, Carl, I've got some little flat dick out there that's pumping it for me. Now, unfortunately, they used to, like, when I was pumping gas, dude, we used to, like, wash windows for people and try to, like, get a dollar off of them. Like, that was always my hustle, man. I'd wash the front and back windows, see if I could get a dollar off, like, how much I could make in tips that day. And that's the money I used for beer money in high school. Because that way, like, my parents couldn't really monitor the tips I got, but they could monitor my paycheck and stuff like that. But nowadays, you go to a gas station, and the guy acts like he's all put out to, like, fill your car up. And I'm like, hey, jerk off, you know, I'd probably give you a tip if you wash my windshield instead of stand there and look like you're handicapped.
Maybe he is.
Well, if he is, I apologize, but I doubt it. He's just lazy. He's just a lazy fucking bozo. I go to this one gas station, and that guy at least washes my windshield.
Right on. There's a few, you know, there's a handful of stations around that still do that, but it's pretty much all self-serve up here. But hey, I don't want to talk about gas. We should probably wrap up this show so I can get my kid to bed, actually.
Well, all you guys and your kids, it's Wednesday night. I'm going to go to the bar and shoot some pool and probably have some adult beverages and enjoy single life.
You go shoot some snooker?
Yeah, I think we'll probably shoot a little snooker tonight. It's always good.
You got a snooker table at your favorite watering hole? Or?
Not at my favorite one. There is a snooker table nearby, but at my favorite watering hole, they just have the standard uneven bar tables.
Right on.
With the sticks that you can't even like roll over because they're so bent, like you'd have to roll them on a sawhorse in order to get them to actually roll completely over.
Stick them on the lathe, straighten them out.
Yes.
Okay, dude. Well, we should kill this thing. Good show tonight, as always. Thanks for everything you do, Lepaki, and have yourself a great night, man.
I will, Carl. Thanks, buddy, for the opportunity, and I'm glad you were able to join us tonight.
Woo-hoo! Yeah, me too. Should be good for a while, but you never know. Peace out, man.
Okay, people, all right, brother. Time to disperse. Party's over.